啦。
Hello everyone, we're very happy to see all of you. Welcome to this morning's chapel as the South Africa Cross Cultural attempts to give you some sort of picture of what our trip was all about.
Our journey to South Africa began on September 2nd when all 27 of us flew into Johannesburg, South Africa. We spent our first few days at Jacaranda Lodge and attended language classes to practice our Sesotho. We then began our three-week homestay in the nearby township of Soweto. We focused on the area history, taking tours and immersing ourselves in the culture. We departed Soweto and traveled to the mountain kingdom of Lesotho. There we stayed a few days at a local lodge, but then spent 3 weeks living with host families in the village of Malealea. We took part in development work and lots of hiking. Our next stop was a small town in the Orange Free State named Bathuli. Through a short homestay and numerous tours, we learned how a small South African town works. The next week was spent traveling along the garden route along the coast in small groups. Our free travel ended in Stellenbosch with some group time at Banghook Lodge. A short drive brought us to Cape Town, where we had the last of our three-week homestays. While in Cape Town, we attended lectures at the University of Cape Town and explored all the sites of the beautiful city. Our last stop was back at Banghook Lodge in Stellenbosch to bring our journey to a close with group time and reflection. On December 4th, we said goodbye to all of our friends that we made in South Africa and made the trip back home, safely arriving back in America. The rest of our sharing will give a more in-depth and personal depiction of our experiences in South Africa. Now we will hear from Heidi, who will share a journal from her experience.
This is a journal that I wrote on September 23rd, 2009. Learning about South Africa's devastating history while living in Soweto, a township where blacks were forced to move to during the apartheid, has been an enriching and powerful experience. A few days ago, we visited the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg. While the museum experience was a painful one, it was very essential in understanding what the blacks, coloreds, and Indians in South Africa went through just a few decades ago. My heart aches for the innocent people that were robbed of their dignity, respect, and humanity. I cannot even begin to understand how a group of human beings could impose such intense brutality, oppression, and hatred on another group of human beings. We are all the same in our flesh and our blood. I found myself purely hating the Afrikaners, who after the negotiations between the blacks and the whites started, tear-gassed and shot down hundreds of innocent schoolchildren. How can people do such harsh things? And why on earth did these oppressive and inhumane laws last 46 years, only ending 15 years ago? Why didn't the rest of the world do something? As horrible as the apartheid was, only a small handful of white South Africans actually stood up against it, with their vast majority fully in support of it. Thinking about this, I have to wonder what side I would have been on had I been a white South African during the apartheid years. I would certainly like to believe that I would have been among the handful who stood up against it, but I can't be sure. Going against the grain is always a hard thing to do. And chances are, if I would have been present at Jesus' trial, I would have been among the crowd to say, crucify him. So who am I really to point fingers? At the Apartheid Museum, I realize that evil does, in fact, lie in all of us. Even me, and therefore, I am sadly capable of all the brutal crimes that happened during the apartheid in South Africa. But I think by acknowledging that evil does exist inside of me, I am more able to choose good over evil, justice over injustice, and peace over violence. This does not in any way make me less angry at the Afrikaners, but it does help me to see the log in my own eye and remove it before pointing out the speck in my sisters and brothers' eyes. We are all in desperate need of God's mercy and forgiveness.
Next, we have two skits in which we will try to help you understand a little of what it was like to live in Soweto. One of the first things that we did in South Africa was try to learn one of the local languages, Sesotho. These lessons were quite challenging at times, but under the tutelage of Guru Judy, we made progress. One of the early lessons looked something like this.
Welcome back, class. Today, we're going to work on words that look the same, but sound completely different. Our first word today is Taba. It has three meanings, the first being mountain, the second, happiness, and the third, to sprinkle salt. Could we have one of our language learners or helpers please pronounce these so that the students can hear the difference? Yes, Jamina.
Taba, Taba, Taba.
Now, did you all hear the difference? Let's have one of you try.
Taba, Taba, Taba.
Very good. Let's move on to our next word. Noka. Noka means snake, river, and hip. Let's have another language helper pronounce these for us. Yes, Sepo.
Noka. Noka. Noka.
Do you all hear the difference?
No.
Can one of you try it, please?
Noka. Noka. Noka.
Noka.
Noka.
Noka.
Noka.
Noka.
Noka.
Well, it's time for tea, so let's take a break and meet back in 20 minutes.
Here's an illustration of something that happened to us early during our time in Soweto. It ended up teaching us a valuable lesson about African time.
Dumela, si, dumela, buti. Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
We're here to invite you to a braai we're having at our house on Friday.
Okay.
It's going to be a lot of food, dancing, music. It's going to be a lot of fun. 3 o'clock, Friday.
Okay.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, guys, do you guys know what a braai is?
A braai, a favorite South African pastime. It's really just a word for barbecue, but much more extreme. Picture 30 pounds of meat to be consumed by 5 people. Leftovers are mandatory, and it's a great way to relax with your friends.
All right, yeah, it's like 2:45. We should start heading out.
Here it is.
Yeah, I think it's down the street to the left, just a few houses.
Yeah. Oh, this is it right here.
Yeah.
Where is everybody?
Yeah, I don't, there's no one here.
It's like 3 now.
All right, well, we'll just hang out, yeah.
Okay. 1 hour later.
Oh, my gosh.
Guys, I am so hungry.
I'm getting really impatient.
I know.
Hey, guys, I saw a Bonnie Chow stand down the road. I know it's some kind of food.
Bonnie Chow.
Bonnie Chow. Well, it's basically a hollowed-out quarter bread loaf filled with French fries, bologna, hot dog, cheese, some sort of special sauce. It's usually served out of someone's front yard and is a local fast food. I remember when Bonnie Chow was the highlight of my day, but it has since lost its appeal. 3 hours later.
Guys, I'm starting to get hungry again. Yeah, let's just head out. It's getting dark. It's not going to happen.
Hey, guys, we're so glad you made it.
Hey.
You guys ready?
Actually, I think we're going to head out.
We have a curfew.
Yeah. It's like
We're just getting ready to start it, though.
We're just starting.
Even tomorrow. Okay. Even tomorrow, okay. We will have another grind.
What a total Tia.
Tia. Probably the most important thing we learned about the African lifestyle. TIA, T-I-A, is an acronym for the words, "This is Africa." It was rare that anything started exactly on time. So, anytime something ran late in Africa, Harlan would always say, "TIA, TIA, TIA, TIA."
We spent most of October in a rural mountain village in the country of Lesotho called Malelaya Village. We lived with host families for 3 weeks with no running water or electricity. We took bucket baths, used outhouses, and went to bed with the sunset around 8 p.m. During the day, we went hiking and visited schools and the local clinic. We also went to different churches and did development work, planting trees and working in the community gardens. It was the most challenging yet most rewarding part of our experience. And now for some skits about our time in Lesotho.
All right, you guys ready for this hike?
Yeah. Go, go.
Good morning.
Good morning, man.
Morning.
Morning.
Hey.
Morning.
So, how's the night?
Good. Yeah.
Okay, Elizabeth, how are your bed bugs?
I have like 300, no lie.
300? I thought 120 was bad. I'm so sorry.
Justin, how are yours?
I didn't get any more last night, but there were two rats sleeping with me.
Oh, rats?
Hey, guys, at least the weather's good today. I mean, it's been raining for the past couple days.
Oh, my goodness. The other night, it was so cold and rainy, two of our goats just, like, keeled over and died. Just, like, I was like, two, and the head was on our kitchen table this morning.
So, we will overcome these problems, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Bring it in. The theme on three. One, two, three.
Madima!
Harlan!
Harlan, slow down! I'm in shape for this!
You know, this morning I had a thought. We are no longer in Harrisonburg.
Yes, yes.
Wait, wait, where's Rochelle?
R.E.A.
In this next skit, we will be depicting a normal walk through the Malelaya village in Lesotho. Note how peaceful it is.
For a journal from Lesotho. Lesotho meant I was finally able to walk in the outdoors and hike up beautiful mountains and spend time in a rural village. But when we arrived in Lesotho, I felt more homesick than ever. We were separated from the group more than usual, the hikes were difficult, it rained 7 out of the 20 days we were there, and everywhere I looked, I saw people in need. Harlan talked to us about needing to make a decision right there and then, whether or not we would be able to overcome this. If we really immersed ourselves and spent time with the people, the time would go by quickly, and we would really make a positive change within ourselves. Sitting, wishing for the days to pass would only make it harder. To be honest, I didn't have the strength to just let go of all my fears, until I realized what I was surrounded by. I had a group of 23 other students and 3 leaders behind me through everything I did. I realized how much relationships meant, both with my host family and the people in the village, and the relationship with my group,
especially my roommate. She gave me a little tough love and made me laugh until I cried. The most important thing I realized was that God was there with me through Lesotho. Even when it was freezing and I was cuddled in my sleeping bag, listening to the never-ending rain against my tin roof, a verse that I read over and over kept on my mind throughout the day. Philippians 4:7. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. What I saw through all the amazing people I met uplifted me each day and gave me a peace from God that surpassed all understanding. I'm going to share a poem that I wrote while sitting on the side of a mountain in Lesotho. Light comes first, pushing past the clouds with rays shooting into heaven. May continues stirring porridge as the bright yellow ball of fire escapes from its home deep below the mountains. She heats the kettle and pours the water, steam filling the room as she wakes the child. The sleepy eyes hide from light, while Santa Marina preserves the comforts of Bosillo. Patches of light hit the mountainside, illuminating the color and contrast of the master painter, as the herd boy walks into the valley, staff in hand and the sound of bells behind him. The river divides the mountains like the mother, cutting slices of bread steamed in her pot, while the child washes her face in another. Light continues its journey across the sky, setting the pace of life for the gardener cutting morojo, and the daughter sweeping away the red dirt that fills the path of the father walking to the lodge, where travelers wonder at the brilliance and beauty that is nothing more than everyday life. Across the valley, the mountains prepare the bed for light to enter, as the mother still stirs her meal, and the herd boy uses the last bits of orange and red to quiet the bells and silence the hills. The child burns a candle to brighten the room just enough to wash the dishes, while light sleeps and the moon keeps watch. Then Santa Marina opens her arms while the eyes of May and her child close, waiting for light to come out of slumber and start the world again. And now we're going to have all the girls come up and sing a song that we learned in Sesotho. We first heard it in the church in Soweto and sang it many times afterwards. And the basic translation is, "We praise you, God."
Traditional songs, we are also able to learn a few steps of traditional dance. My host brother Richard was a dancer in the local village band, and we picked up a few steps.
Hey, I'm a
Next, we'll be singing a song called Santa Morena. Santa Morenas are part of the traditional dress of the Basutu people. Both males and females wear them in all conditions of weather.
Our group journeyed to a small town called Betuli. In Betuli, we were hosted by a knowledgeable historian and storyteller named Tony Hawking. In three action-packed days, Tony showed us all around a typical South African town. We saw schools, the police station and prison, a concentration camp memorial, the magistrate's court, and the largest business in town, a retirement home. The end of our time in Betuli was a two-day homestay with white families. Despite the short amount of time, we made good connections with our host and enjoyed observing some of the differences in lifestyle between blacks and whites.
After Betuli, we went on free travel. We split up into groups of four or five and traveled along the garden route. We stayed in backpackers and lodges right along the beach. Some highlights were whale watching, ostrich riding, bungee jumping off a 216-meter bridge, the highest in the world, and just relaxing on the beach where we got our beautiful tans.
To give you a better taste of what happened on free travel, we have some numbers to share. Number of towns visited on free travel, 12.
Number of cumulative days spent on the beach, 195.
Number of ostriches ridden, 4. It's a very bumpy ride.
Games of pool played, 215.
Total number of seconds in free fall, 17 students who bungee jumped, times 4.5 seconds per free fall per jump is a total of 1 minute and 16.5 seconds of free fall.
Valuables lost: 3 cameras, 2 iPods, 2 wallets, and 1 passport.
Number of passports found: 1, thankfully.
Number of whales spotted: 17.
Number of haircuts: 30.
Number of hippies conversed with about the meaning of life who have spent 3 years in a cave stringing together shells named Clifford, 1.
Books that we read just for fun, 145.
Number of toenails lost, 1.
Number of books in Tony's living room, 61,508, roughly.
The last homestay on our journey was in Cape Town, where we stayed with predominantly colored families. Being colored in South Africa has a completely different meaning than we are used to here. The colored people of South Africa were one of the three groups or classes of people in the tricameral system of apartheid. They are people of mixed race, which commonly include Malay, Indian, and Khoisan people. This is the population of people that bridged the gap between the white and black classes during apartheid and are often said to have been some of the worst oppressed. While we were staying with these families, we attended lectures at the University of Cape Town, the oldest and one of the most prestigious universities in the country. Many of us had fun trying to figure out the public transportation to visit friends and make it to lectures on time. We also spent time on many of the beaches and even did some hiking up Table Mountain and took in a breathtaking view of the entire city. Our families took great care of us, and it was a pleasure to stay with them in such a beautiful city.
My name is Vilma, and I am a white. I live in the wealthiest section of Cape Town with my husband and two daughters. I invite my friends over for tennis every Wednesday while our housekeeper, Edith, uses the Mercedes to drive my girls to ballet. Today, Edith was sick and I had to drive them myself. I hate getting stuck in this World Cup construction traffic. It only gives the hawkers more time to try and sell me one of their useless trinkets, probably stolen. And they wonder why we put up such high walls. No. No, thank you.
Ugh, I hate it when they do that. My name is Tabang, and I am a Zulu. My name means I am happy, but I am seldom happy these days. Just to get to this part of town, I have to take 3 trains with all this stuff. Usually I buy warehouse leftovers and sell it for a little more, just to get by. Sometimes I hardly have enough for the train to get here. The ANC has my vote, but it certainly hasn't done much since 1994. My shack isn't even as big as some of these cars, and I'm still waiting for the house the government promised me 6 years ago. My kids share a bed with my wife and I, and we share a pit latrine with 70 other people. My wife's actually at work right now, but I hardly ever see her. She's a domestic for a colored family in an old white section of town, so we can at least have Pop and Morojo at every meal. Oh, a red light. Here's my chance.
My name is Maureen, and I am a colored. My husband and I just moved here last year when he got promoted. It's a mostly white neighborhood, which makes sleeping at night a little easier. But then again, our neighbors don't really talk to us. I still can't believe I live here, mostly because it doesn't feel like home. But then again, when have I ever felt truly at home? I never really knew my family's history, since the whites refused to acknowledge the mixed marriages that made me who I am today. South Africa is my home, and yet many refuse to acknowledge my brown skin because it's just a reminder of this country's messy past.
My taxes go to clean up this mess the government has made, and I certainly don't see any improvements. They at least better clean up those unsightly shacks along the highway before the World Cup. But why do they exist at all?
Hardly selling any of these stupid trinkets at least gives me time to think, but it certainly doesn't pay the bills. Why is this my only option? At least during apartheid, we could blame the system. But now another Zulu man is my president, and I still live in a shack.
We can't deny that there has been some change. At least the blacks have a voice now, but where does that leave me? I wasn't white enough under apartheid, and now I'm not black enough for the ANC. I might drive a nice car and live in a better neighborhood, but will I ever belong?
I'll admit, we did some pretty awful things during those 40 years, but we're trying to move on. It's more complicated than you might think.
I mean, I know it won't change overnight, or even in 15 years, but I just hope the scars that I have from the past 40 years don't get left to my children. I am a South African.
I am a South African.
I am a South African.
And this is our Rainbow Nation.
Okay, we have for you a top 10. You know you're in South Africa when?
Number 10. You go to a soccer game and are confused as to whether it's a sporting event or a dance party.
Number 9. When jumping into a waterfall or plunging into a rocky whirlpool is just a 30-minute hike away.
Number 8. When the language you're learning has sounds that are impossible to reproduce.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, Justin.
Number 7. When you're thrown into a classroom full of 9-year-olds who have never seen a white person before and are expected to do a 3-hour lesson on American history. I'm not American.
Number 6. When the view from your front door puts Skyline Drive to shame.
Number 5. When you are awakened at 6 a.m. by roosters and cowbells, but it doesn't matter because you went to bed at 8:30 last night.
Number 4. When you need to carry a roll of toilet paper wherever you go, just in case.
Number 3. When you have the privilege of taking communion from Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Number 2. When in one day you meet 10 locals who all speak a different language and have a completely unique story.
And number 1. When you make so many good friends. No, I'm just kidding. We really became really close to our leaders, and they just became really good friends of ours. So we asked them to come forward right now, and we have something for them. So.
So on behalf of the whole group, we just want to say thank you for all the love and support you guys shared on this trip. And our tribe wouldn't have been complete without you guys. So we have signed pictures of when we met Desmond Tutu for you guys.
So I wrote this song while we were in Lesotho. It's mostly written in the language of Sesotho. There are 3 different parts. The first one means, we thank you, Africa, we love you, Africa. God is here in Africa, and our hearts are here in Africa. The second part means, greetings, peace, and hope to the people of Africa, and we will remember Africa. And the final part is the saying of Lesotho, Hotsopulanala, which means peace, reign, and prosperity.
Thank you.
thanks everybody for coming. Hopefully that gave you a good picture of what our trip in South Africa was like. You can ask us lots of questions later. Go well.